It's fair to say that adult-oriented animation has not only proliferated in the streaming age, it has convinced viewers that any story that can be told with live-action characters can also be animated. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The Hulu original live-action series, Pen 15, recently decided to animate one of its episodes and turned to animation firm Starburns Industries, a company with a long track record of both television and theatrical animation. Joining me to discuss the latest episode of Pen 15 and the state of animation in the industry, I'm happy to have back on the program El Paso native and partner at Starburns Industries, James Fino. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Great to see you, my friend. We go way back. Thank you for joining us by Zoom from L.A. You are, as I mentioned, an El Paso expat that has been in L.A., gosh, almost 30 years now, hasn't it?
Yeah, I can't believe it. Man, time flies.
And a lot of those years working in and around animation. So congratulations on the latest show for Hulu. I guess we should set it up for audiences. Pen 15 is kind of a unique live-action show on Hulu about middle school life, and its two principal writers and actors, Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle, play their 13-year-old seventh-grade selves. The twist here is that both writers and actors are in their 30s, but most of the rest of the cast is actually 13. And it's, a show about the drama of middle school and the confusion of early puberty. A lot of awkwardness here. How did this project come to Starburns, and what were the Pen 15 producers wanting to accomplish by doing an animated episode of this live-action show?
So actually, we met Anna and Maya a couple of years ago. We actually, talking with them, they had approached us for some animation for basically it was a tag in one of their shows. The episode, as you say, they're two girls, best friends, who are middle school. In this one episode, they were focusing on self-discovery of their bodies. Mm-hmm. And so they asked us if we could please design, fabricate, and animate two talking, singing vaginas for the tag of their show, which we were like, sure. And actually, Anna and Maya are hilarious. They're wonderful. And so it totally fits in with this, with the series of being awkward, all about awkwardness, all about self-discovery at that age. It takes place in the 1990s. So they're basically on their landlines, phoned with each other, kind of like just talking with each other about what they're seeing about their own body. And so these two vaginas at the end are the representations of the two characters kind of singing and making goofy noises and giggling and laughing. and we have never done anything like it, but we did such a good job with it. They came back to us later on with a full episode that they wanted to have done in 2D animation. This was an episode where they were going to travel to Florida to kind of capture this really kind of bad family vacation, like so many of us can happen, you know, at a certain age. Mm-hmm. Where it's kind of like a vacation, but like nothing really happens. It's not very eventful. And when we got the script for it, we couldn't stop laughing. It was the thing of like that we always get when we're talking with about live action shows is like, why should it be animated? Like, what about right. This live action show when people are asking for you to suddenly animate it? What makes it animatable, or why should it even be animated? Why not just do straight live action? Well, in this episode, Anna and Maya go with Anna's dad. He drives them to Florida to a little resort. In their adventure on the boardwalk to get caricatures done from an artist. As anyone who has ever had a caricature done of themselves knows, it can be kind of
frightening. It amplifies certain aspects of you.
So it can be kind of frightening what you get back. And so what happens here is that Anna and Maya are excited to get a caricature of themselves together. And Anna's caricature has a humongous nose. And then Maya's caricature has a very round face with a accentuated mustache under her nose. So when they were planning on doing this
live. Which, by the way, both girls are horrified when they see the picture.
Absolutely. And which we can all relate to, having gone through something like that. So originally, when they were considering doing this live action, they were exploring, like, well, what kind of makeup will have to be done? What kind of prosthetics will have to be done for the giant nose and for the big head for Maya and her mustache? And it was going to be very complicated. And then COVID hit. So then they're like, oh, well, maybe this is a good opportunity to pivot and do this one as 2D animation. And then that way we don't have to deal with prosthetic makeup. And it actually makes it more natural that it's an animated episode where all those features are accentuated from a caricature. And that's what happens in the episode. Basically, after Maya and Anna get that caricature back, a magical thing happens for overnight when they go to the one of them goes to the bathroom and sees that she has transformed into her caricature self, and she screams. And then her friend comes in, and they both see that they both have now taken on those caricaturists of the caricatures. Right. So the rest of the episode plays out with them with those big features, and but nobody else sees them except for themselves. So those are the insecurities they kind of drag around with them.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was specifically the moment in the show when I watched it that I thought, okay, this is why this episode is animated, because you literally can't do these kinds of things, or can't do them easily in live action. And it made sense to me at that point. So you mentioned earlier that the 2D animation of the show is the way you went. And I know a lot of animation nowadays is heavily augmented, or at least assisted by computers. Was that the case here? It has a very analog looking sense to it. So it still has a sense of the hand drawn.
So because the show is set in the 1990s, which was still a very analog type of era that we all grew up through, we wanted the animation to also have a feeling up from that era. And so we initially started looking at what were the cartoons from the 1990s, like Beavis and Butthead, Daria, and Nickelodeon cartoons, things like that. And so then we're like, okay, well, what were some of the art house films that were like at that time? And so we decided to not make it look like a Nickelodeon cartoon, or not make it look like one of the cartoons that we're familiar with, but rather than go a little more art house with it and do hand-drawn animation. And because hand-drawn animation is so expensive and it takes such a long time, and also once you do a shot that's hand-drawn, excuse me, you can't easily go back and make corrections to it, because it will take so long. It takes so long to get it done in the first place. So we decided to team up with a small studio in Ireland that specializes in hand-drawn animation. And in fact, they have a few ex-Don Bluth animators working there.
Interesting.
Which was great. Now, the balancing act we had to do was do hand-drawn animation for a show that was not 22 minutes long, which is a typical half hour animated show, but 37 minutes long, because that's how long the live action shows are, or a little bit longer. And so we had a very economical set of resources that we had to work with, but we had to capture really great looks. So we hired Angela Semple to work with us as an art director and animation supervisor. She's an amazing artist, and her drawings, her designs of Anna and Maya were just gorgeous. They were beautiful. And so we decided whenever you have a lot of animation to do, but not a lot of resources for it, the good thing to always do is to lean heavily into great design, mm-hmm. and then pick moments that are animated a little bit more than other sequences, where you can have less animation going on, because the mind will basically remember all the sequences where you have more animation.
Interesting.
And as long as you have all the good designs throughout uniformly, it helps lift the overall project and episode. in this case, the when you watch the episode on Hulu, it's you'll notice that it's not as fluid as some other shows are, but it also gives it a sense of timelessness, or rather, it actually gives it a sense of belonging to that same universe of the live action Pen 15, and so it all ended up working great. That's one of the things that in animation I've learned over the last few years. Sometimes you have a limitation, whatever it may be, number of people that are working or amount of time you have to get it done. And whatever that may be, you lean into it as a strength. And then that becomes kind of like an attribute that defines that animation. And for ours was that it has great design, great characters, a great script and acting, but it's a little less animated than some other things are. But it all.
But as you say, you really hide some of those compromises, the economic compromises in the show. I didn't get a sense that there was anything missing. How long did it take to animate 37 minutes?
Okay, so we started the project last October.
Wow.
And we finished it. When did we finish it? We finished it late August. It went live August 27th, and we pretty much finished a week before. Well, no, it was just like 3 weeks before then, because they still had to do post. But you know, with these animated projects, a lot of times, you know, you go right down to the wire to make sure everything is done. Just because you never know, you know, some sequences go smooth, others take more time. So
yeah. It's still amazing the resources put towards this versus a live action show, which can be pounded out in less than a week probably. But for listeners, it is part of it. I think it's the last episode as part of season 2 on Hulu. So if they want to just jump to it, they can dial up season 2 on Hulu of Pen 15. I wanted to segue a minute because I was thinking about your time over the last 30 years in L.A. and Hollywood and working in and around television and film, a lot of that in animation. I know you and I grew up just down the street from one another, and we watched a lot of animated films and animated shows. But, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, television animation was largely the domain of kids programming and really just Saturday morning, and that was it. You know, so we gathered in our pajamas around the television, and that was when we got our animation fix, and then it was over for the week. But I got to thinking about just the huge proliferation over those last three decades of animation, and now with streaming services looking for so much animated content, that I wonder if you would agree with this. I had this notion that maybe it's our generation that grew up watching televised animated shows that is now in your position to be greenlighting and producing and creating animated shows, because it wasn't so unusual in your lifetime. But maybe the generation before us, who rarely saw animated television, if ever, it seemed like something for kids, whereas now animation is certainly legitimized, and I think there's no doubt that it is widespread, has reached acceptance among adult viewers.
Yeah, that is actually, I agree with your point of view there. It's our age group now, we're executives now, we're greenlighting things, and a lot of us have memories of growing up with certain kinds of animation. When we did the community Christmas special, it was definitely done in the style of the tip of the hat to Rankin Bass, harkening back to all the Christmas specials in stop motion that we grew up with, and that had, you know, aired, you know, year after year, that many generations grew up with. And so even though the animation was of higher quality by right. now, because we have more technology to help out, it was still designed to have that feeling. Because of the nostalgia, and all of us, all the executives got excited about making a program that was like that. Similarly, later on, Community had a 2D episode that was called G.I. Jeff, that was in the style of the 1980s G.I. Joe shows.
I remember when you did that.
And yeah, that was like another nostalgic thing where it actually attracted so many animators to the project who are huge G.I. Joe fans that grew up with those cartoons. And in fact, if it hadn't been for them, that's one of those projects. But if it hadn't been for them, we wouldn't have delivered on time. Actually, we had so many fans working on it that helped generate that enthusiasm, helped the project actually get done on time. And so now, like when you and I were growing up, yeah, it was the three main networks with their Saturday morning cartoon offerings, and every now and then, like the CBS special that would do like the Peanuts some holiday special. It wasn't until you and I grew up, got a little older, that we saw Ralph Bakshi's Lord of the Rings in like 1978, and we started seeing Watership Down and Plague Dogs and other in the early 80s, like started seeing more adult animation, but only in theaters, really, not for television. Right. So,
and then came Fox in the 90s with Simpsons.
In the late 80s, yeah, Simpsons took off and that changed, that exploded everything.
Yeah.
I mean, we did have Beavis and Butthead come on board after that, and for cable, MTV, and Liquid Television. Liquid Television changed a lot for us as well. With Eon Flux and with the Max and the Head, a lot of us grew up with those experimental animated shows. Just remember the different styles. Well, and then of course MTV and music videos. Music videos changed a lot.
They're often animated themselves.
That's right. So I think the early 80s and mid 80s exploded opportunities of different platforms for different styles of animation to basically make it to our airwaves and influence us as we continue to make stories.
Those feel like ancient history now, but I think just in the last 5 to 10 years, the swift ascendance of Netflix and Hulu and Amazon that have completely eclipsed all of those broadcast channels and cable channels and pioneers of some television animation that you're taking meetings all the time, I know, in L.A. Do you see this continuing as a strength? Is it going to grow even bigger? I mean, there seems so much animated content now. When you're meeting with distributors, are they still trying to find more and more animated content?
Absolutely, it's going to grow even more. It's going to spread because it's already gone beyond just adult animation fare, comedy fare, to straight on horror genre. We just did an animated horror series for Facebook Watch that was Mexican Gothic horror. And it was written by two Latinas, directed by two Latinas. We had a majority Latinx artist crew. 90% of it is in Spanish. It is something that we were proud of because it's so authentic.
And the name of it?
The name of it is The Woman in the Book. And so if you go to Facebook Watch, it's actually, we did it for Crypt TV. So if you look up Crypt TV and look up Woman in the Book, then you'll see some of that story. It's a really good story.
Woman in the Book.
Anyway, so animation is beyond, adult comedy is going into straight on genres like horror and sci-fi. And on Netflix, and definitely the other streamers are exploring other uses of animation. Documentary is a huge platform for animation now, which podcasts that are being now adapted for animation. It's just a great tool and not limited to a children's kind of platform.
So what's the next thing on the Starburns platter? Anything that you can divulge?
I can't really name names, but we're working on a great pilot right now for a very well-known Latinx comic as a pilot for Comedy Central. We're doing a series of shorts based on a very popular AMC comedy series. y'all will have to guess, but we love doing that, and we have like several features, stop motion features and animated features in development right now. And just working on other series right now in development. I mean, it's one thing that COVID did aside from making live action people pivot towards animation. It's it allowed us time to actually generate great relationships with all the new streamers.
Fantastic. Well, watch this space, and I'm sure we'll have you back when some of those are out in public view. Well, animation is certainly here to stay. We've come a long way, I know, since watching Saturday morning cartoons in our pajamas, and it's great to catch up with you, and it's always great to see your name and credits. Thanks for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you.
I've been discussing the growth and acceptance of adult-themed animation with James Fino, producer and partner at the animation company Starburns Industries in Burbank, California. Starburns' current work can be seen in the latest episode of the original series Pen 15, which you can stream on Hulu. You can check out some of Starburns Industries' animation work at starburnsindustries.com. For an extended version of my conversation with James Fino, log on to the On Film Archive at ktep.org. Thanks to the staff at KTP for editing today's program. I'm Charles Horek. Thank you for listening to On Film.